Hello and welcome back to Masters of Our Domain, version 2, the new Masters of Our Domain, Redux. It is me, Milo Edwards. I'm joined, as ever, by my co-hosts, Patrick Wyman and Phoebe Roy. How are we doing?
Yeah. Rocking and or rolling. Living the dream.
We are rocking. I'm rocking and rolling. I don't know about you.
I think I may be rolling.
Just rolling.
Just rolling today, like Sisyphus' big ass rock. crack, actually. Mm-hmm. That kind of rock. That's what we're
doing.
So, going
kids,
for.
The way Daddy's getting through the day is by getting absolutely blasted on pingers. So, I'm probably going to say a lot of emotional shit to you today. A lot of it probably won't make sense.
Yeah, no, I'm actually thinking about getting into poppers.
Oh, don't do that. No. Brother,
no, I would never. I'm a taxpayer. I'm an upstanding adult here, and so I would never do anything.
There's only a certain amount of dilated the asshole of a renowned historian can be.
That's true. Yeah. The new thing mournfully
into the mic there.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Phoebe. Did you want
to? I don't know what to say. I just don't know what to say to that.
The new big thing in my neighborhood of like affluent upper middle class suburbanites is microdosing on shrooms to get through your suburban day.
Okay, yeah.
So they're doing. There's a lot of people who are kind of like half zooted on mushrooms, like driving around in their $150,000 or $200,000 car, just tripping a little bit,
just slightly tripping
on their way to the Chick-fil-A for lunch.
And meanwhile, Pat's rejecting poppers because he's a taxpayer.
Because I'm a taxpayer. That's correct. Yeah.
It's a little bit cucked of you, Pat. I'm not gonna lie.
Hey, look, man, this is Trump's America. You're either the cuck or the one watching the cuck.
Yeah, I've done poppers.
Hang on. What do you mean the one watching the cuck? That's the cuck.
I don't know.
Isn't it?
The one watching the cuck. Like the double cuck. He doesn't even get to sit in the cuck chair. He's like on the floor observing.
I guess what I meant to say is
he's drinking the cuck's piss.
Correct. Yes. I meant to say if you're either the bull or the cuck in Trump's America and there's no middle ground.
Okay.
Is that better? Did that fit?
Yeah, I think that's
I'm no longer a story.
It's a cuck and bull story.
No. We didn't have any cucking
this guy
in this episode.
He's not even the cuck. He's in there, but he's not the cuck. Okay, he's got a bottle of poppers. He's smelling it, but he's doing absolutely nothing, folks. He's not even arousing the bull or the lady. He's not. That's what the cuck's doing. He's doing nothing at all. He's like Tim Waltz. He's sat there, tampon Tim. He's sat on the floor, not even allowed in the cuck chair.
There you go.
Phoebe, you're just appalled. Just appalled here. Like, I wish I could paint a picture with words of your face right now. And which part was it that got you? Was it the poppers? Was it the cuck chair?
I think it's the cuck chair. Or if you prefer the no, you know what? I was going to try and do a pun with curl chair, and there's nothing. There's absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I kicked that one around in my head as well, and I was like, nothing doing.
There's nothing there.
I appreciate the fact that all of us thought of the curl chair as we were having this.
we are scholars of the ancient world, which brings us neatly to our topic
beautiful.
Of the day.
Seamless.
We are cracking on with Those About to Die on Amazon Prime. We have all watched, in preparation for this, season 1, episode 2, which is called Trust None, which feels like it should be Trust No One. Feels like they've
trust
just...
Noon. Yeah.
Yeah. Feels like a typo.
I'm going to be honest, though. It in the grand scheme of things wrong with this episode, I think that's probably bottom half.
It's probably in the bottom half. It's probably not in the top.
I reckon bottom quartile. Let's push it further.
Yeah,
that's right. Let's push it further.
This was an adventure. This was a real journey here.
So here's how I suggest we handle this. I think that we should do a sort of like little overview of the kind of what we don't have to do a beat by beat. If you want to watch this show, then please be our guest. But
if you want to watch this show, don't. Really don't.
Yeah, really don't. We're watching it so you don't have to. We're performing a public service here, much like the Aediles, who also performed public services.
Yeah, and the Beastius Maximus or whatever his name is.
The Ludus Beastius. Don't forget about the Ludus Beastius. Mm-hmm. We are Aedil Podius. That's who we are. So we've been watching, so you don't have to. So what we're going to do is we're going to just say what the main kind of plot beats are, such as they are, and then we can get on with some of our chitter chatter.
So the summary of this episode is actually extremely short, and it's one of those ones where it doesn't really give an accurate impression of what the episode is about. It says Domitian owes money to Tenax. Vespasian is the first emperor who is about to have his blood sons, as opposed to his adopted sons, succeed him on the curule seat. Kwame wants to kill Domitian. I feel like we're missing a lot of... Most of the episode, for me, revolves around Tenax's scheming
feels like
trying to get
a piece of, like... It feels like a kind of piece of neighborhood gossip from your dad. And he's just...
Yeah.
He just keeps... He misses really, really important parts of what he's trying to tell you.
Yes, or when you... When a man goes out for drinks with a male friend who's recently had a major life event happening, and he gets home and his wife, girlfriend, partner is attempting to get details.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's something we're familiar with. In our house. My partner likes to he likes to get a headline. Mm-hmm. And then ask no further questions whatsoever. He's done this with like people having major life events. Like he'll come back and be like, oh, you know, such and such split up. And you say, oh my God, what happened? You know, we're talking about a couple who's expecting their first baby. And it's, oh, they've split up. Oh my God, what happened? And oh, I don't know, I didn't ask any further questions. So we have not asked Wikipedia any further questions. So for example, yes, it's true. Vespasian is about to hand over. He chooses Titus in the end. If you're playing the succession theme in your head right now, please be aware that you are getting it wrong, because nobody can successfully sing the succession theme tune. Like, try and do it. Like, seriously, try and do it.
Yeah. I don't know what the succession theme tune is.
You know what? That's not bad.
I actually think, while watching this, you should sing the White Lotus theme song in your head. I think that would be much more appropriate.
The only reason I have a handle on the succession theme is not because I have watched Succession, which I have not, but because Pusha T did a verse using the succession theme as the undertrack. So that's the only reason I know that.
There's a discordant bit in the succession theme tune which no one could do. I can't believe neither of you have seen it. Everyone's seen it. I thought it was the law.
No.
Well, no. You should expect to receive some kind of visit from the prestige TV cops.
A summons,
yeah. They're going to sit you down. They're going to make you fucking watch it.
They're like the canonical opposite of the TV licensing authority, that they come around to make sure you have been watching TV.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They don't care if you're paying for it or not. They just want to chalk up whether you've understood the plot beats, whether you've been tweeting about it, whether you've done any GIF reactions to particularly revelatory moments in the show.
You need to do a GIF reaction.
Whether you've been posting about it in the group chat.
So have you blogged it?
Have you blogged it? Have you reblogged it?
Blog it.
Blog that.
Yeah. Wasn't it a thing, for some reason, do you remember that guy Sebastian Gorka, who was... he was like an insane British Hungarian man who like used to be in the TA, who'd become like an advisor to Donald Trump somehow. And he would talk in this kind of insane, slightly British, half-American tactical voice. And but he had a thing where he would only use Bing for some reason, because like he didn't trust Google, and so he would sometimes
let me hear more about this Gorka fella, because he sounds like my kind of guy.
But it's very funny.
It's very much
the
worst person you know makes a good point situation.
Yeah, and then he would like throw out a fact, and he would go Bing it, just Bing it.
This guy also was big into doing like the contents of his pockets, like, this is my everyday carry. types of posts where he's got like Desert Eagle,
Baby knife. Bell, yeah,
yeah,
14-inch hunting knife.
A piece of cheese. It was very odd. It was a very odd thing.
Please remind me in that case to send you the picture of the baby's everyday carry, which I assembled in order to send to George at work. I figured that you did
like a tactical baby carrier, like a plate carrier, but with a baby in it, maybe bulletproof. No, that's only in the US that we have to do that.
Teddy bear, stun gun, 14 million Iraqi dinars, just all the things a baby would need.
Yeah, he's got
two passports.
He's got he's got a very, very out of date Facebook. It's got a lot of slurs in it.
he's got slurs for groups that don't even exist anymore. Let's hope we don't introduce him to any Silesians.
Yeah, he's got insulting names for countries that literally don't exist.
Yeah, he's like you can't trust a Galician in August.
You cannot trust a Galician.
You can't, or at any time of the year, I'd say. Frankly, it's woke to trust them.
Yeah, no, he's got a beef with the Ruthenians.
It's a lot of stuff about the Dalmatian dog people. I don't know if that's supposed to be an insult or whether he's just confused it with, you know, an actual Dalmatian.
Yeah, 101 Dalmatians was actually originally just a census of the camp that I'd constructed.
101 Dalmatians was the original title of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations.
There we go.
Well, yeah, no, that was the contents of Diocletian's stables.
Yeah, very good.
101 Dalmatians. Oh my god. Okay, well that's a good riff.
We still haven't done any plot.
Yeah, we're not actually any closer to understanding what happened in this episode.
No, that's absolutely true. So they're really, really keen on making a whole big production about the fact that this is the first emperor who has had his blood sons competing for the curule chair rather than adoptive sons. I don't know why they're like, bearing in mind how like gloriously inaccurate the rest of it is, I don't know why they're so proud of this little observation, because it was just happenstance.
Mostly it's because either they didn't have sons or they were like murdered.
I mean
Britannicus probably would have succeeded Claudius had like Agrippina not murdered him.
What was Augustus's grandson called? Gaius. Little Gaius would have succeeded him. It's just a really, really peculiar thing for them to have fixated on, considering
they've got stats brain. They're doing Moneyball. They're like, we can recreate the emperor in the aggregate.
They're sort of doing Moneyball. So it is determined that he's chosen Titus. He comes up with some bullshit reason for why he has chosen Titus. I think it would have been just easier if he just said, well, he's the oldest one. This is how it works.
Yeah.
So I want to take a step back, because you're absolutely right that this is a kind of a weird thing for them to fixate on. And I think it is symptomatic of the general problem with this show is that if you were to explore why it was that none of the natural children or grandchildren or blood relatives of prior emperors had succeeded them, you would run into the danger of figuring out something fundamental about Roman political culture in this period of time. You would actually come face to face with, you know, kind of the mechanics and norms and behaviors that made up Roman political life in the late first century BC and early first century AD. And instead of doing that and coming to some sort of fundamental conclusion, a theme, if you will, that would drive the inclusion of particular material or points in the writing, you would have something to say.
Yeah, and they really don't want to do that. They're allergic to having anything to say, and apparently to doing any kind of reasonable background research. Both things they're sort of treating like a kind of 3-year-old who doesn't want to eat broccoli.
It's completely flattened.
They're just it's closing, like, just folding their arms and going, nope.
Yeah, there's you would I mean, the idea of adoptive sons of something, not exactly a meritocracy, but selecting based on ability. Like, there are all sorts of threads there that you might explore if you were a show that was actually interested in the context.
Yeah.
If you viewed the context, the setting as being a character that has something to add to the overall production instead of just being a setting. Like we talked about the difference between a costume drama and a historical show. And this is one of the ways in which you can see that this is a costume drama.
It is a costume drama because instead of exploring any of that or tugging on any of those threads, which you're right, would have made for a more interesting show. Instead of that, we have the quite startlingly boring subplot about Tenax and the chariot racing and fixing the chariot racing, and there being factions controlling the chariot racing betting, and they keep saying like, this is no good for our faction, and that's really, really unfortunate, because they've made it sound like a kind of pack of virgins playing a kind of tabletop role player game. Because why are they talking about their factions? What are they up to? What are they at with their factions?
What is a faction?
What is a faction?
Right? Like, this is if you were actually interested in this world, right? You would think about factions as cross-cutting things that unite different levels of Roman society, right? Which I think is kind of what they're going for, where they're like, we use the factions as a way of showing us different slices of these different social groups and providing some sort of coherent structural unity to this show. That's, I think, probably their idea. If like I were sitting in a writer's room, like knowing writers and how they work, I think, and they're putting all this shit up on a whiteboard and trying to figure out how they make these different plot lines and characters connect, this is kind of the almost like faction as plot device.
But they've already got the cross section of society as plot device, because every cross section of society is involved in the chariot racing in the first place. So
yes.
Yeah.
So why?
Fucking hell, we've got the red faction away this week. Their food in the stands is diabolical.
Why come up with this? Yeah. Oh.
Some of the worst garum I've ever had. they love a
but
scrap.
They don't. What they don't realize is that this is an opportunity to bring life and texture to their world by exploring the nature of cross-cutting social ties in Roman society. And the closest this gets to being interesting is when Tenax wants to become Domitian's client.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. That's the closest they've come to, like, we have found a social institution or idea that is somewhat foreign to us, but important to them, that we can use as a way of exploring and deepening the world and the characters in it.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that they just
do that.
Because I did a double take, because they just threw that in where Domitian's like, you can be my client. And then I'm like, cool, I have a classic screen. I know what that is. But then I was just like, wait a minute, no one else fucking knows what that is. That's like such a specific bit of knowledge to like throw away in like an Amazon drama and not explain.
I have that exact thing in my notes, which is considering that they go out of their way to boringly explain every single other part of it. So I was waiting quite patiently for them to have like a sort of bit of expository dialogue explaining what the client-patron relationship is. No, they're not gonna do that. So instead, they just make it just sound very, very gay. That's what they're putting over.
Let's say you're a tough geezer. You're Billy Big Bollocks, and you run the manor right now. Your clients are some other geezers who they're loyal to you. Whatever you do, you say jump, they fucking jump, all right? And they come round every morning, and you give them little instructions. You maybe hand them out a bit of moolah. Do you know what I mean?
Milo, that's so much more fucking compelling than the explanation we actually got. You understand that I'm assuming that was out of Rock and Rolla, maybe. if we had to pick a Guy Ritchie movie,
Guy Ritchie,
King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. But that is infinitely more straightforwardly compelling and explanatory than anything that we actually got here, right? Like, I know about clients. You guys know about clients. Probably some of the people listening to this know what clients are, but like they just drop this major like piece that makes Roman society actually function in there with zero explanation at all, aside from it goes both ways.
It goes both ways.
Like, well, that's,
but what is that?
What the
you're just trying to tell us you're a switch? Is that what you're, is that what you mean? That's,
I mean,
all
I can
get-
top, like, that's.
Yeah, so I hear he's clienting for the emperor's brother these days. Yeah,
it all comes back to poppers.
And then, yeah, it all comes back to poppers, and then it all comes back to, like, just, like, there being half of the story left out. Like, oh, what? How did that happen? Like, what's the backstory there? I don't know.
You're going to see
happening.
The looters bestious. You'd better take these poppers with you. I hear it's a bit of rough.
Jesus. See, I mean, call him the ludus bestius.
Oh, Jesus God. I am
the ludius ursus.
Somehow the Numidian subplot continues to get more racist.
Yeah, oh God. Yeah.
Like significantly more.
Super,
that's
super more racist. They got this bit where Domitian like starts going on about how like Numidia is like the land of like kind of cockroaches and rats. And it's like, wouldn't have thought that.
It's been under Roman control for 200 years.
What are you talking about, man?
It's been a Roman province for 200 years.
Yeah.
Like, that. If you haven't gotten it Romanized in 200 years, maybe that's on you, brother. Like, that's not a them problem. Even if you think that that's the goal, which was not a conscious policy, right? Like, that, not something that they actually cared about that much.
It's complete bizarre. So we've got, let's just sort of flip through our Rolodex of plot. We've got Tenax bottoming for Domitian.
Is also, and this is an element of the plot I didn't fully understand. He's trying to like extort Rupert Penry Jones, the consul, to do with the ownership of the horse faction, which he won in a bet.
Yeah.
But I thought that he wanted to start his own horse racing faction. But now he seems like he's trying to sell the shares of the horse racing faction back.
So he wants to use the money from the sale of the blue faction shares to start his own new faction, which is not the blue faction.
Okay, yeah, he wants to set up on his own. He wants to take his clients with him.
So yeah. So he wants to, he's going to cut free of the blue faction and use that as basically seed money. Was my understanding.
So he's got a startup.
Yeah, and then he's gonna be sending all of the fans of the blue faction like a cut and paste text that's like, "Hi bestie, just so you know, I'm no longer at the blue faction. I've actually started up my own salon. if you wanna come and try it, that'd be great. Obviously, if you don't, that's fine. But just please don't mention this message to the blue faction. That'd be great.
Here are the ads on socials. If you want to tag us, that really does
help. We're at Teal Faction.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Leave a review. while we're on that, another note that I had is just everything is so dark in this show that I can't focus on who is who.
You don't know what color the faction is. It's like Hollister in there.
So
the first TV show ever to be shot entirely in a Hollister.
So I have to scribble down, they should all have ring lights.
Yeah.
They should carry ring lights around with them.
Is this like we've all just been spoiled by content creators who all have ring lights? Or is this has genuinely gotten worse?
See what you're looking at. I think that doesn't sound like being spoiled to me. I think it's okay to expect to be able to see what you're looking at.
Yeah, I have to be like, I have to do like magic with the lights in my living room to get it to just the right background level of light so that I can see the screen and make out what's happening. Like it took me 4 minutes of adjusting my, like, I don't know if you know, like adjusting your lights for 4 minutes in a living room is a long time. Like, and granted, I was quite stoned, but like still, it should not have taken me 4 minutes to get the lights set up so that I could make out what was happening on the screen.
But you're a taxpayer, Pat.
It's legal here.
Oh yeah, that's true.
It's legal here, Phoebe.
I keep forgetting that. That's so funny to me.
I know a number of fine, upstanding citizens who are deeply involved in the marijuana business. The dispensary I go to is owned by parents of my friend's kids at school. Oh, God. Or my kids' friends at school.
Imagine being the weed parents at school.
We went to an event that they hosted, and then we left with gift bags from their store.
Mm-hmm. There were definitely weed parents. I remember there being some weed parents of kids at my school.
Yeah, they definitely existed. It's now just like, at least among certain segments of American suburbanites, it's now just completely normalized.
Yeah, people are getting baked.
I think people are drinking less and consuming a lot more other things.
Mm.
At least in this particular age bracket. So plot-wise.
There's also something about, they keep calling the chariots their rigs, which I found jarring.
Hands off my rig, mate.
They're talking about either their vapes or their dicks. It's not clear which.
Or like a semi-truck, like a giant lorry.
Yeah, fine. Also,
yeah, like nice rig.
Also, that sounds good. And there's something to do with the MILF is
Tenacity's. Which MILF? Sorry, just trying to put this on my big MILF chart here.
The curly MILF, not the queen MILF.
Rupert Penry Jones is MILF wife, but he's also a cuck. Because she's fucking Scorpus the charioteer.
She's fucking Scorpus the charioteer. There's another bit of surprise research in here, which is that one of the horses is called Incitatus, which is the name of Gaius Caligula's horse.
Auspicious name for a horse.
An auspicious name for a horse. He was a good horse. He was a good fellow. A really strong whinny. Very glossy flanks on Incitatus. But it feels like something that you should maybe kind of flag up. Like someone should like notice that the horse is called that and mention it or something.
Yeah.
Like what? Like the average person does not know to my mind what Caligula's horse was called.
The thing is, you know,
it may have been Caligula's made-up horse.
Yeah, and Caligula may have been a bad guy, but look, it's not the horse's fault, is it? You know, that horse was just following orders when it rode across the Bay of Naples on the entire grain fleet. Do you know what I mean? Like that, he didn't know that. He was just there when he made them all pick up seashells. You know, he's an horse, right? He goes where the salt lick takes him. Do you know what I mean?
The horse is a mercenary, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
From the company of worshipful horses.
Not capable of consenting, really.
No.
Which brings us back to the ludus bestius.
Which brings us back to the ludus bestius. There's a really fun bit where the charioteer, whose name I keep not catching.
Scorpus or the other one?
No, the Spanish one.
Oh, yeah, because we've got the Spanish lads who are trying to sell horses, but then it turns out that two of them are actually, they're just planning to stay in Rome and use their horses for chariot racing, and they have a whole argument about it.
Yeah, but they have this, there's a bit where he's trying out the horses, and it's a really, really weird and really tonally off bit, because they have this like kind of Harry Potter on the broom music in the background when he's riding his horses through his like AI set. And then he's like, oh, I've never ridden a horse that fast. And it's like, what? We don't care about the horse. This is not an interesting subplot.
It's the vibe in that was, I'm glad you brought up Harry Potter, because the vibe in that scene was exactly the Harry Potter ride at Universal Studios. like there's a ride at the Harry Potter at the Harry Potter park at Universal Studios where you ride a broomstick, and that is exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, I can just imagine.
Which where it's almost like it's made to be so realistic that you can tell it's not real.
Yeah.
Like it's like Uncanny Valley territory.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the way that all the visuals in this show look.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should have gone with more old school Harry Potter visuals. Like everyone should have looked like the PS1 Harry Potter game. Hagrid.
Everyone should be acting like Daniel Radcliffe in like the first film.
When you know what? Like... Put Daniel Radcliffe in it. Let's have Daniel Radcliffe as Tenax. That would be great.
That That's the kind of thing that would actually be an interesting choice.
Yeah.
And this show has
although you don't want Daniel Radcliffe near a horse.
Is he not a horse guy? What's
so Daniel Radcliffe was famously in a production of that play Equus. It was like the first thing he did after Harry Potter.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I thought that was quite good. I thought that was quite good. I thought that was quite highbrow of me.
Yeah.
Trying to get things away from talk of the lewd
intertextuality.
and yet you still came back to horses. So what does that say?
I'm just going to allude to horse fucking in a more intellectual way.
I feel like there's so many kind of like comedy options as well that they could sort of go down. They could have like a kind of race course guy, couldn't they? They could have a kind of elderly, kind of grizzled cockney, in my days these races had integrity, you know, that kind of thing. That could be fun.
You racing at the Circus Maximus? Don't make me laugh. That's not an horse. It's a donkey.
Behave yourself, son. Behave yourself, son.
Oh, come on. We just want to give it a go. No, you're taking a piss.
This is the fundamental problem with this show is despite the fact that it has violence and sex and things going real fast, it is sublimely uninteresting.
It really is uninteresting. Although I didn't think of a good thing to say about it.
Okay,
let's hear it.
I've got a compliment. It's a dubious compliment.
Let's go to Phoebe's compliment corner.
It is a compliment nonetheless. Even though this has now happened twice. It has not escaped my attention. This has happened on both these occasions to one of the black female characters. But even though there have been threats of sexual violence, we have not been forced to sit through any sexual violence. And I know that sounds like a low bar to clear, but so few dramas manage to clear it, and certainly so few historical dramas manage to clear it. So I wrote a little tick down, like, "Ooh, we didn't actually have to watch a hideous rape scene. Isn't that good? Mm-hmm. Well done, writers." But when it comes to violence in general, it's just not very violent. It's like they were trying to kind of sell it to a more mainstream studio.
Yeah. And like, it's maybe, like kind of PG.
Yeah, like maybe try and have it on at 8 o'clock in the evening. That's the kind of the vibe that I'm getting from the kind of the level of violence. Certainly, like compared to Romecast's Rome. It's like watching a different show, because it is a different show. I am a genius. Mm.
They were hoping to serialize it on Loose Women when it all fell through.
But they were hoping to have a ride at Disney World. But that's not happening now.
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean. It fits into the Pirates of the Caribbean cinematic universe.
Exactly. It was kind of reverse Pirates of the Caribbean. The TV show comes first, then the ride, as opposed to the ride first.
It has a similar approach to historical accuracy as Pirates of the Caribbean. Okay.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's not a bad parallel for it.
I feel like more research was done for Pirates of the Caribbean. At least like the redcoats are wearing the right kind of uniform.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they got the pipe clay.
They got the essential component.
That's the one thing about depicting the redcoats uniform is you're given quite a big clue by the name. it's training wheels for the costume department, really. Like, what should these redcoat guys look like?
Then the team from Butlin show up and they're
going to say sort of get me Hennemore type situation. Listen, Hennemore, you've got these 18th century British soldiers, they're the redcoats, and then you've got these Butlin staff members, the redcoats.
Aren't the Butlins the bluecoats? Who are the bluecoats then?
Oh wait, yeah, no, Pontins? They are the bluecoats.
Butlins are the bluecoats and Pontins are the redcoats.
Well, then they can be Hessians. We can make them Hessians.
Okay, fine.
Yeah,
they're St George's men. King George's men.
It's the King's German Legion. Yeah.
They're in the red faction. They're in the red faction.
The schism between Pontins and Butlins, it goes back to the English Civil War.
That's true.
And that's why the different coloured coats persist
that's
to this
true.
Day.
That's true. It goes back to the Knights Templar. People don't know this. Yeah, this is what I keep picturing someone doing. So just like showing up, being like, okay, look, we've got bibs and skins. Bibs over there, skins over here. And then, you know, we fight. But except we're not going to fight. We're not going to show any fighting. Even though one of the main like kind of plot threads is about gladiators, and they're not showing any gladiators doing any gladiatoring.
So little gladiating so far in this show for a show that is named for it.
Yeah, so little gladiating. And this, and so, because something that's really already starting to piss me off, right, is that okay? So I know that there is there's a little bit of controversy, little bit of historical debate over the thumb up, thumb down business.
Mm.
We don't know for sure. We don't know for sure about the thumb up and thumb down. It's not. There's no clarity about it. But you know, they're trying to kind of whip you up into a kind of idiot frenzy about the eventual thumb up, thumb down that's going to happen, probably by Domitian, right?
Mm.
They're teasing
That's foreshadowing, baby.
They're teasing it. They're doing a kind of is he going to do? He's going to do it. He's going to do it in the last episode, and there's going to be a whole thumb up, thumb down thing. And the worst thing is that I know that however bored I am, or however like kind of twitchy with distaste I am about this stupid show, I know that when I see the thumb up, thumb down, I'm going to start hollering like an ape. I know it. I know I can't.
Pavlovian response. Everyone loves the thumb.
Pavlovian response to the thumb. I fucking love it.
So, something I mentioned last week that I was really hoping that we could come back to is the concept of schlock.
Yeah.
I think I said this last week, is that I actually like schlock. Mm-hmm. I like a schlocky show. Where it's like really digging into the I'm fine with gore and sex and kind of like what you would call lowbrow, right? Mm. Like I do not mind a lowbrow show, but just because you make something lowbrow does not mean that it's shitty.
No.
Right. Like that doesn't mean that it's poorly written, poorly plotted, uninterested in its setting. Mm. Lacking character development. Schlock is it's a register, not a matter of quality.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. Like, so you can like, obviously there is a difference between a Martin McDonagh film and fucking Zack Snyder. Right. But like, it's not that a film made in the register that Zack Snyder is making films has to suck. They suck because it's Zack Snyder making them, not because the genre has to make terrible things.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Absolutely.
Like you can, according to the rules of a genre, no matter how lowbrow, you can still make something good or bad in that genre. Just like something that's shooting for highbrow is not necessarily good. Apparently, that's Megalopolis.
Yeah.
Which we should probably
think of addressing
we should probably do that at some point. Yes,
people are crying
hear me out on one I think they are. Hear me out on one suggestion though. Zack Snyder's Equus.
I'd watch it.
Release the Snyder cut of Equus.
You're totally right. Yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, like just get the director of the National Theatre. Like, he told me there'd be an horse. This is just Daniel Radcliffe with his knob out. What am I watching?
I'll tell you what, we've not had any complaints.
I was promised an horse. I don't know why the director of the National Theatre is also a Guy Ritchie character, but you know, let's run with this
audience is middle class teenage girls. They came for an hour of Daniel Radcliffe with his knob out. The horse was just a convenient fig leaf.
Well, he probably could have used a convenient fig leaf on account of, you know, having his knob out. God, I've totally lost the thread of what I was saying.
Schlock.
Yeah, schlock. Yeah. No, Pat. No, Pat. You're totally right. It's a schlock isn't the fabric. It's the weave.
Yeah.
And so what we've got here is we've got some boring storylines. We've got some stupid storylines. We've got this again. Absolute kind of howling cliche of someone who's like the kind of the local hard man trying to kind of torture information out of somebody, and then the person says like, "Who I work for is much scarier than you," and you're sort of given to understand that who he works for is Mrs. Consul Milf, I think, who turns out to be like his nemesis.
What's scarier than a MILF?
But the problem is with Tenax. Is that he's not scary. He doesn't actually do anything which is like kind of markedly different from any of the other characters. Like, so far what we have seen as like as proof that he's meant to be like, as he's meant to be like, you know, the kind of the unreliable narrator and the villain of the piece, but the one who you sort of get behind, the kind of the Hannibal character.
Mm.
But they sort of can't bring themselves to make him actually do anything particularly bad, because he's still the main character, and you can't loathe him. So far we've seen him like not mercy killing an injured charioteer, which is like, it's not ideal, but he gets a bit squeamish about it. He sometimes does, oh, sorry, now my hands are tied here, which is not very villainous. It's not very threatening.
Yeah, Titus Pullo does more questionable shit in the first 20 minutes of the first episode of Rogue. And you're like, supposed to like Titus Pullo.
And you're supposed to actively like him. And there's a bit, so we see again the young women who've been enslaved. Their mother is trying to kind of buy them back. And Tenax sees that one has been bought by his nemesis, Curly Milf. So he buys the other one, and the mother goes to see him and sort of says, I want to buy my daughter back. And he sort of says, you know, and she says, you know, if you touch her, I'll have you, or words to that effect.
And he's sort of like, no, you won't.
He doesn't exactly say, I'm not gonna. What do you think I am? Do you think I'm a fucking pervert? I'm not gonna rape her. What's wrong with you? How dare you? How dare you suggest I would do such a thing? It's like, you're supposed to be the villain and she's a slave. As far as you're concerned, she is an item of property, so you can't rape her. Like, what?
Yeah.
Why are you getting fastidious about this, bearing in mind that you are supposed to be the bad guy? And he pretty much gets offended, like kind of like steady on
indignant.
Now.
He's yeah. indignant about it.
Like steady on. Like, I know, okay. I'm supposed to be the feared villain of the lower city, but I'm not a fucking nut.
I'm an
upstanding
underground gambling operator. We're regulated by the FSA.
you mentioned the contrast with Titus Pullo and all the questionable shit that Titus Pullo immediately does in the first episode of Rome. I would like to draw a parallel with another anti-hero, the Mandalorian from Disney's Mandalorian series.
Oh, yes.
Mandalorian Star Wars series.
If you remember from earlier, Patrick smokes weed.
Yes. In the second or third episode, I think it's the second episode of The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian, who has just retrieved Baby Yoda, sorry to spoil this for you if you haven't seen this in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. The Mandalorian retrieves Baby Yoda. He's trying to go back to his ship, and it turns out that some local Jawas, very small aliens wearing hoods, pretty cute little guys, have stripped his ship down for parts. And so the Mandalorian at this point takes his rifle and disintegrates a number of the Jawas, just like straight up shoots them, and they blast into tiny little particles of dust, like murders a bunch of Jawas for the crime of stripping down his ship.
Oh, yeah, when he disintegrates us.
Yeah, so... that is a much more questionable act than anything our underground gambling king has gotten up to here. Like, that's like, it's actually kind of villainous to shoot small defenseless aliens with a disintegrator thing. Like, that's a thing that you have to think about as a member of the audience and weigh and be like, huh, that's probably not great. Probably shouldn't have done that. That is a much more challenging thing for the viewer than anything this show has done with Tenax in the first two episodes.
Yeah. And he says, like, when she's finished spying for me and being go between my enemy slave and myself, then you can buy it back. And she sort of says, I'll buy it back at cost. And he sort of says, oh, you'll buy it back for whatever price I set. And it's like, yeah, but that's still not it's not very villainous, is it? He's still just like, all right, how are you? All right, hello.
Yeah,
hello,
I found this scene so weird.
I'm Tenax, the villain. I'm the bad boy. I'm the bad boy of the Circus Maximus. I'm the junior ludus bestius. That's who I am. Like, what? Mm. No, you're not. You're just a bit of a
I'm
twat.
The Eunice bestius.
The anti-hero in a fucking kid series is more villainous than this guy.
Because yeah, she comes in and she's like, oh, well, I'll buy her back at double the price. And he's like, no, I need her to be a go-between for this thing. And then she's like, okay, what about this? I'll be your go-between and then I'll buy her back at cost. And then, but then also you have to let me stay in your house. And it's like, but he's already got the go-between. You're being like, what if I give you a deal that's like worse and more hassle for you than the deal you already have?
And he said, and he goes, oh, you know what? I hadn't actually thought of it like that. No, fine. Yeah, that sounds all right. Let's do that.
Actually, you know what? The way that you're being treated is pretty colonialist, which I'm actually quite against.
You know what?
A lot of the themes in the music of Fred Again are actually quite anti-colonialist, and I do support that.
You have just made some really strong points, and because I'm actually a little bit puzzled with why you've been enslaved in the first place, because as far as I'm concerned, you're Roman citizens, and I'm pretty sure you're not really allowed to just randomly enslave Roman citizens. I'm pretty sure, but it says so on your receipt. So there is a sort of bill of sale. I do have an authentication document here. Don't touch that. It's that belonged to my father.
This is exactly the fucking problem here. Like, is it? This show has no interest in or respect for its setting.
None.
It's one thing to not respect it and to make choices that kind of cut against the grain of the norms of the period, right? Like, that's one thing. It's another to not even be interested in those dynamics.
No.
And this show is not even interested in those dynamics in anything like the way that the people of that period would have understood them. And shows, movies that do this stuff well are actually interested in exploring the disconnect between our expectations and norms and values and those of the period that's being portrayed as a way of shining interesting light on our own world, right? It's what makes it interesting as a commentary is holding up an alternative and examining people's behavior in that context and welcoming you to examine your own assumptions. Like, that is the value of using a historical setting, and this show does none of that. Ooh. Absolutely uninterested in it.
Absolutely. Almost proudly uninterested.
Yep.
I would say. So what's Kwame up to? What's our boy Kwame up to? There's a bit where he speaks to the lion again. We see the lion.
Yeah. They get him to fight like a big fucker.
Nobody knows at this point whether or not anyone in Rome knows what a lion is.
No, because, no one's sure.
Because they keep saying stuff like, oh, well, you know, this is a lion. And so you'd think there'd be some kind of consistency. So either people would say, well, what's a lion? But you have a couple of people saying like, well, what the fucking hell? What have you been feeding your cat? What is that?
Well, a lion, it's sort of like a big angry dog, but from Africa. It's like an XL bully, but like tropical. You know,
again, tropical XL bully.
More compelling, actually more compelling. Like, this is I can't stress this enough. Like, it's boring. It is the cardinal sin. Is it's not even like I'm going to stick with it. Obviously, we are. Let me put it to you guys this way. Are there any plot lines or things that are happening in this show or themes that you are excited to see move along or come to fruition? Like, is there any potential here for this to be better than it has shown in the first two episodes?
I'm enjoying the young man playing Domitian. I'm enjoying the kind of the sort of the school production of what's that play called? Posh.
That he's
bringing to the whole thing, because he is behaving like he is in a completely different.
You're going to be my client tonight, and let me tell you, you're going to have to do something for me.
He does understand the assignment, I'm enjoying him. I quite enjoy the Titus and Berenike storyline. If only because I feel like that again. I feel like they're trying to almost say something with it, but they don't know quite what, and they have just made Titus just this kind of sort of grunting non-entity, which is sort of isn't what he was like at all, but they just have like lots of kind of conversations about about like how he's going to rule and like what's it, like what his plans are going forward. And Berenike is very kind of like, Berenike's got very kind of like hot GF about the whole thing, and is very kind of like, oh, you know, I mean, go if you want to, go be emperor if you want to, if you want to. Like, I'm not stopping. You know what? It's fine. Go be emperor. That's cool. That's cool. I'm okay with that. I support that. I actively encourage that. Oh, you're doing it. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, I actually find that quite funny. I find it quite funny that you're actually going to go and be emperor. I find that quite funny.
I'm actually quite busy with my Solus Fanatus anyway.
I am laughing at the moment. I'm not uninterested in that. I just think she's got a very nice face. The woman who's playing Berenike. So I wouldn't mind seeing more of her.
She's high up in our ancient world, in our fictional depictions of ancient world MILF rankings.
She's seeded to go far.
Yeah. She is.
I would put her close to MILF Madness competition.
Yeah, I would put her close to Lucy Lawless in Spartacus.
That's big talk, Pat.
It is. That's big talk. A bold statement, but I'm staking my
Lucy Lawless and her natural enemy, Lucy Lawful.
Lucy, you've got Lucy
Neutral.
Yeah, there you go.
I want to come back to what you said about Domitian, or about the actor playing Domitian, because you're absolutely right. It seems like he's in an entirely different show. Yeah. And a better show, quite frankly.
Yeah.
A show that I'm much more interested in watching, because that guy seems like he knows he's doing schlock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he seems to understand the register that this is supposed to be taking place in.
Yeah. He's schlocked and loaded.
Yeah. Also, the guy playing Scorpus, I think, understands what show he's in.
Also, Scorpus is such a fucking stupid name. We need to come up with a Latin name. Never mind that there are so many options that we could just call upon to name this guy. We should call him like, you know, Blorp. Let's call him. No, we can't call him Blorp. Come on, man. Like, let's just.
Yeah, this isn't Star Wars,
Sklorp.
Guys.
Sklorp. Let's call him Sklorp. No, we're not calling him Sklorp. Scorp. Keep going. Scorpus.
Yeah. Now let's Latin there that shit
is.
Up.
There it
let's
is.
Let's put a little sauce on that.
Now we've switched that up.
Speaking of Sklorpus, what's going on with the fucking poisoned horses? Like, does it matter? Yeah. Does it matter?
It's something. Okay. I think that is to get us to consider whether or not the Romans had vets, which they don't. They don't clarify that. And I also think it's a way of kind of shoehorning a mention of Vesuvius and the special ash that you can get at Vesuvius. I know that this is deeply insulting both to the intelligence of the viewer and also to the skills of the writers, but I think that's why that's there.
Phoebe, you're absolutely right. That's 100% why that's in there. It's supposed to be a little nod to the cleverness of like the depth of their research and how far they've gone into this. And it's once again, fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's mistaking that for actual engagement with the world. Like, no, that's a fact. That's just a thing.
Yeah.
That's just a statement. Like, that's not actually understanding in any meaningful way the world in which you have set this.
I mean, it would have been quite fun at this point to have had like Pliny the Elder as a character.
That's the part that is so fucking maddening about this is it is difficult to imagine a way in which they could have made it more boring or made us care less about. I'm only kind of joking.
Which is yeah, a great
I'm only
start.
Kind of joking in the sense that like none of these characters are especially well drawn or well differentiated, except for again Domitian, whose actor playing that guy is just happy to chew the scenery whenever he's given screen time.
Yeah, he's just enjoying himself tarting around, and I think that's fine.
They're starving him on set. They deliberately won't feed him any of the canteen food to make sure that he chews the scenery in every shot.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to make sure you got teeth marks in there.
Yeah.
That's part of the performance. But that is effectively a different show than what they seem to be doing. Otherwise, I'm deeply confused by it.
Anthony Hopkins can't chew the scenery because he's doing it all via Zoom.
Yeah, he's not actually present at all. The whole thing is being done
in every scene. They had to correct it in post.
He's doing it in a green screen in his home studio in Wales or something.
Well, you know how they ended up doing it. They sent him a piece of the screen of the scenery. Mm-hmm. They got him to chew it and then send it back by return of post.
Spit it out.
Yeah. Mm. There you go. Yeah.
Like a cheek swab.
This is a piece of scenery. This piece of scenery has tested positive for COVID.
This was very normal turn of phrase.
This was chewed by Anthony Hopkins himself. In fact, we have got Anthony Hopkins on live video link up. Anthony, can you hear me? No, he hasn't got the latest version.
It's quite children in need, isn't it?
He's got the latest version. Yeah. Yeah.
He's updating Microsoft Teams right now.
Yeah. Oh, I've just got a. Oh, you know what? I don't know my fucking username. All right, hang on. I've got to reset it. Anthony one.
Yes, I did. I had a lovely time chewing that bit of scenery, and now I understand we're auctioning it off for children in new media. So get texting in on that number.
It's a white lion rescue.
Very good. There's a bit when it turns out that, which I think doesn't really make much sense, which turns out that Kwame has been lying about his prowess with lion work in order to get included on Roman hunts, which is bizarre. And he says to a Roman, there's something about the lion being a demon or having a demon or being possessed by a demon or something, which again I was like, oh, are we gonna get into some Roman demonology? Because Roman demonology is really, really super interesting. No, we absolutely are not. Instead, we have some of the worst lines of dialogue in the whole show, which is where his interlocutor says, I fear claws and teeth, not magic. And Kwame says, "You should fear both." And it's like, is that what is that?
Iconic.
What is that, you fucking twat? What does that mean?
I had to turn it off and walk away for about 3 or 4 minutes after that scene. I'm just like, are we being too hard on this, or is it really this bad?
Such a great question. I don't know. Maybe you should try and watch it not on wheat.
maybe we should.
Phoebe, I'm going to be real honest with you. I'm not going to do that.
I'm not going to be doing that.
We should have an independent adjudicator. An independent adjudicator to watch each episode with us, just like someone with no knowledge of the classical world whatsoever.
What, like the teleombudsman?
We sort of refer this to. We grab a man off the bus and we're like, right, what do you make of this?
What do you reckon?
And then we use him as a sort of baseline for the more jaded members of the cast.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe. I am not uninterested to see what comes next.
I would like to know if that's any help.
Like, I'm not gonna. I mean, obviously, I'm not gonna stop watching it because I've signed up to watch it for my job. But if I was just watching it, you know, for my, you know, in my private time, if I was watching it non-professionally, if I was an enthusiastic amateur, I would probably carry on watching it. But that's not really saying much because, as regular listeners to the show will know, I don't really stop watching things once I start watching them.
No, I mean, you famously watched all of Young and Hungry.
I did famously watch all of Young and Hungry,
which is terrifying.
It was a great time.
I feel like we've got to see some gladiating at some point, surely.
We've got to see some gladiating.
They're teasing it.
We've had some stuff where Kwame's been kind of set up as a sort of ultra gladiator because of him catching the lion or killing a lion with his bare hands or something. I don't know. And he's going to be set up as a kind of exhibition piece, like a kind of bait dog to be killed by Domitian's favorite gladiator, who's big fucker, non-specifically big fucker, who's got a stupid name. What's he called?
Flammer,
yeah. So that's idiotic.
Yeah, his name's Magnus Ioannis.
Flammer. Yeah.
And he says bosh after every strike of his sword.
Bosh. He's a big boy. He's a big boy. Everyone's sort of like kind of like going up to him, being like, do you fancy joining our five-a-side five-a-side league, big man. Look at you. Look at fucking Giacomo over here.
Yeah, he's very much built like a centre back. You know, he's not. He's never going to be a winger.
Just a big
man. He's a large boy.
He's just a large boy. He's just Domitian's large boy. So Domitian is setting Kwame up to get killed by him. And then Kwame's all like, I'm going to kill Domitian. And no one's... And there is a bit where Domitian is like chit-chatting with the gladiators. And Kwame gets close enough to him to like probably lunge for him. And I was like, surely the son of the Flavian dynasty, as they keep insisting on calling it, surely he's got like some kind of like guard around him, right? He's not just like going up and like hobnobbing with the gladiators who might not be that chill about the situation they find themselves in. It's entirely possible that a recently enslaved gladiator is not going to be like, you know what, this fucking rules. This whips as a situation.
Yeah. And guys who like, you know, they love the grind. They're like, actually, it's great being a newly enslaved gladiator because I wake up at 4 a.m. You know, I'm training immediately. I'm focused. Okay.
And
every day is life or death.
I'm looking for seed capital so I can go out on my own as an independent gladiator, as a gladiator startup.
The food's simple.
Really exciting.
It's low carb.
That's really exciting. We're going public next year.
I just view this Ludus as a basically my equivalent of Y Combinator.
Yeah,
that's how I understand it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. Oh yeah,
we're just looking for an angel investor.
We have some dumb shit scenes of them building the Colosseum, and I was sort of watching, going like, I'm just waiting for someone to call this the Colosseum, so I can say it wouldn't have been called that. Wouldn't have been called that. It would have been called the Flavian Amphitheater. But unfortunately, A, I was watching it on my own, and B, no one has called it the Colosseum yet. But they're gonna, and I'm waiting for it.
You've got that one teed up.
Oh yeah, I got that one. That's a really cheap, easy win for me. I got that. You know, ready to go. That's like, that one's like kind of teetering off the edge, and I'm gonna fucking.
Well, we're just waiting for them to open it. You know, they're mired in construction delays. It's like the ancient Roman version of Crossrail.
Yeah.
When is and a lot of promises have been made about the Flavian Amphitheater / Colosseum.
It's the Garden Bridge. It's got monstrously delayed by Brexit red tape.
They've been let down by contractors and material shortages.
Look, just some promises about the quality of the joinery were made to me which were not kept. Yeah. And that's just the way it has to be. And we have spent a lot of money on project managers.
Real subpar barrel vaulting.
Real
subpar barrel vaulting.
You see that's supposed to be York stone, is it, mate? Look, tapping it with a trowel. That's MDF, that is. Skivians?
Do you go to the same team that made the Trojan horse? That's fucking hollow.
Yeah, probably for the Greeks and all.
I just can't overstate how much more compelling that was than anything that we've gotten. Like the fact that we're literally just sitting here riffing, and you, the two of you, are coming up with stuff that is miles better than what has actually appeared on the pages of these scripts and on the screen. That's not just my taste. I feel like that's a pretty objective assessment of where we're at.
I think so.
That's what we should do every week. We should rewrite the episode from start to finish.
Here's what this would look like if it were not shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, that's probably a decent way of approaching how we do this show going forward, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Like here's what we would have done.
Yeah, we submit.
Which
our,
is not our, not that.
Yeah. Did so anything I guess that's else pretty much the episode. I think we're done. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I think we are.
nothing worth mentioning.
Titus is going to be the emperor. You know, the horses have been poisoned with nightshade. He then tries to buy nightshade to poison someone else's horses. I don't know. The great pay it forward horse poisoning.
Oh, he poisoned my horse, so I'm poisoning his horse.
The strongest stab of empathy I've felt for any character in this show was when they showed the sick horse on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, that's the most I have felt.
I wasn't happy about that. I wasn't that happy about the lion in its cage either.
No.
Yeah. The horse was like, mate, that bump of ket was bigger than I thought. I'm just gonna lie down for a bit.
Do you know how hard you have to work to make characters bland and uninteresting to just be like, horsey? Like, that's because that's where I am right now.
That's where you're at.
Yeah. Guys, actually, you know what? I'm having fun talking about this with you all. I don't care whether the show is good or not good. Like, I like talking with you guys about it.
There you go.
We're just here to have fun.
Sometimes at the end of watching this show, we all feel like that ketamine horse on the ground.
Being pulled up in our podcaster's sling to do the to do the episode. Yeah.
But by the end of the episode, we're invigorated. We're like the mission talking to one of his underlings.
Just stuff me full of Pompeii and ash, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Cracking stuff. All right, well, this has been a Patreon one, so thank you very much for being bonus subscribers. You remain crucial to the show.
We remain your clients, in fact.
Yeah, that's what we do. We do remain your clients. Yeah, you are our big
bosses. Just remember, it goes both ways.
Yeah, it does go both ways. There's no longer, well, there is still a $3 tier, but it's closed. It remains open to the people who bought in the sort of the ground floor. We are running a pyramid scheme. And now what remains open are the $5 tiers, where you kind of get everything that we're doing at the moment, the Discord, the bonus episodes, etc. And there's a $10 tier if you really want to, if you're feeling flush with cash, if you're Crassus himself.
Because we're going to do some other bonus stuff in the future.
Basically, if you were already subscribed to the podcast, the amount you're subscribed at has not changed, and you can leave it. And if you're subscribing to the podcast now, you have two options, $5 or $10. But $5 at the moment kind of gets you everything. $10 is if you just really like the show and you want to demonstrate.
We should have said in the free episode, but that's fine. Fine.
Yeah. Maybe. Anyway, look. Thank you.
In terms of segmenting the audience.
Thank you for being a subscriber. And we'll see you next week on The Free Feed. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.